Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest episode of the Footmarks podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. And before we get into the mix of things, I'd just like to tell you all that these podcasts on Good Areas, they are powered by our supporters on Patreon. And you can become one of them by going to patreon.com/Good Areas Podcast. Then you can enjoy ad-free content, slag us off in any of the chats and give us recommendations. Lots of fun stuff. Anyway, coming to the topic, and the title for this particular episode of the Footmarks podcast is Lionhearted Siraj. Now, we talked about this in the past as well. Even though we've spoken so much about Siraj, we felt that he deserves a Footmarks podcast of his own. And Jared, you know, Test cricket is a grueling sport as is, and the recently concluded Anderson Tendulkar Trophy was even more so, since it was the only or the second Test series in history where over 7,000 runs were scored. Now, Mohammad Siraj, who had played all five Test matches in Australia less than a year ago, played all five Tests in England as well. He delivered 1,113 deliveries in this Anderson Tendulkar Trophy, which obviously doesn't include his spell to Manchester United captain Harry Maguire in Carrington. And in all of these 47 spells that he bowls in this series, his pace never truly drops, and his relentless pursuit of victory is what ultimately helps India level the series 2-2. How remarkable an achievement was this?
Yeah, I think he certainly was tired at times and probably exhausted. But, you know, he has a motor that few people have, right? Like, I think when it comes down to it, he just has one of those kinds of motors where he can probably push himself for longer than a normal human being can. I think we might have talked about a previous podcast, that sort of Neil Wagner, Jimmy Anderson type personality or body type or whatever, however you want to put it, where they could just go further than other people can for more often. And I think that, you know, one of the pieces I called it, you know, it was about how hard he tries. And I think that we don't really, as a sport society always, or, you know, as a culture in sport, always back the player who tries hard. We do it when someone's not that talented, right? Like, if you've got someone who's like a fringe player and the only reason they've made it is because they try really hard, I think we really respect that. But when you've got someone who's better than that, we kind of go, yeah, he tries hard, but he's a professional athlete. Professional athletes are trying to, you know, should try hard. But he's got a competitive spirit and a motor within him, you know, both physical and mental, that allows him to do things that other people can't do. And I think he deserves the respect of that. And I think it's a big part of being a fast bowler is the ability to come back and bowl spell after spell when you're almost dead.
True. And if you think about it, right, India, they ultimately win two test matches out of five on this tour of England. And both of those test matches don't feature Jasprit Bumrah, which is weird because the three test matches that he does play, India don't manage to win any of those. And in these two test victories, Siraj takes 7 wickets at Edgbaston and then he takes 9 at the Oval. So 16 out of his overall 23 wickets in the series come in those two wins. And it is remarkable. I cannot get over the weird, anomalous stat that he is averaging 35 plus with the ball when Bumrah plays. And he takes his wickets at less than 25 apiece when he is on his own. What do you think makes him step up in Jassie Bhai's absence?
I can't remember if it was me and Robbie. No, it might have been me and Steve Harmison did a podcast about this. And we were talking about the sort of role definition. And Sid Monger didn't like this. He was really upset about this. He's like, no. Like, it doesn't. And I was like, it does though, doesn't it? You are different when you are on this podcast if you're on without me or with me.
Yes.
Right? 100%. There's nothing that you could do. Good Areas is a network that is completely built around my personality, right? Yep. I pay you. Right? I tell you what we can do and what we can't do. And even though you have a management position or a executive position, however you want to put it, like a leadership role, you're obviously always going to be under my version of that, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if you have Saurabh on or Shayan or Varun or Estelle or whoever else comes on a podcast, it's automatically going to be a very different dynamic. You factor that into bowling. Maybe Siraj has a leader of the attack mentality. How do you do that when perhaps one of the greatest bowlers in the history of the sport is at the other end? You become naturally subservient to that person, and you probably try and bowl, even if it's subconsciously, for them. And when I was talking about this to Harmy, he said that he always felt that the best bowlers had the ability to be like, oh, this guy's on. So I'll bowl for him, right? But Bumrah's almost always on.
Yeah.
Right? So if you think about Harmy, he would have bowled with what? Flintoff, Goff, Hoggard, Jimmy, right?
Simon Jones.
Simon Jones. Those guys weren't always on. Like Simon Jones is a perfect example of a bowler who was occasionally really on and sometimes was just, you know, just skidding the ball into the middle of the bat, right? So when he's really on and you're at the other end, you're like, well, how do I bowl for him? Now imagine Simon Jones was Bumrah, because they are in some ways similar in some of the things that they can do, right? If he was like that, then Harmy would always be bowling for him at the other end. He'd be thinking about that from that perspective. And if you go back, there's a really interesting one of like Jason Gillespie and Glenn McGrath. Jason Gillespie, I think, perfectly suited bowling with Glenn McGrath, right? Yeah. In that when he wasn't bowling with him, we don't suddenly see this big burst with Gillespie. He doesn't become this great a bowler. And I think Courtney Walsh would be another really good version of that. They are the sort of people that they are quite laid back, quite intelligent. They understand their place in the world. Do you know what I mean? And that's how they go about their, and that's how they go about their bowling. Whereas we've seen other bowlers like Brett Lee. When does Brett Lee become great as a test bowler? It's literally when Gillespie and McGrath no longer play.
True.
Right? When he gets the new ball, Brett Lee becomes a completely different bowler for Australia and dominates the next 10 or 15 test matches until he was almost physically spent at that point. I think Brett Lee would have had a much better record if he'd been the frontline bowler for Australia all the way through. And probably, even though he didn't get the wicket, some of his best bowling ever was probably in the 05 Ashes when McGrath wasn't even always playing and Gillespie was struggling. True. So he wasn't, and if you look at Brett Lee as a bowler, he's not really made to be anyone's first change bowler, right? He's not really made to be the third most important seamer in a game. And the other crucial thing is, when Brett Lee is the main bowler, he is brought on when something has to happen and he has to force it.
Yeah.
If you think about Siraj, Siraj has that kind of similar kind of personality, right? If you are always coming on after Bumrah, there is a natural sort of suck from that. So I do think there is probably, some of it is when you use the ball, right?
Yeah.
Some of it is just the gravitational pull of Siraj, of Bumrah, and some of it is role definition. And when you put all those three things together, you could make an argument that, I always thought that, do you remember Ryan Sidebottom, right?
Uh-huh. Who can forget Ryan Sidebottom?
Yeah, I don't think Ryan Sidebottom would have been they spent him, right? He was so physically done because they asked him to bowl about 8 miles an hour quicker than he wanted to physically. Yeah. And so he was completely spent. But let's say he kept bowling at about 130 k's an hour, right? And Broad and Anderson come through, and they're number one and number two. I don't know if Sidebottom would have been suited to being the third bowler on that side, because the way that he played, it was all about him being the number one bowler on the side, getting the new ball and everything else. I'm not sure if he would have been naturally suited to that. Whereas Mornay Morkel, right? I don't think Mornay Morkel would ever want to be the number one bowler in a team. Mornay Morkel probably likes being the second or third bowler in any side that he's in, knowing that he has this other backup. So everyone is different. Yeah. And I think there is an element of this with Siraj, right? Even when he plays in RCB with Hazelwood, Hazelwood comes on afterwards, right? And Siraj could have this sort of the opening sort of, part of it. He's still the main guy in that sense. So even when there's another stronger bowler there, he has that. So I think that suits him better. But how do you do that with Bumrah? You don't, right? There's no way, if you have Bumrah out on the field and both him and Siraj are both rested, you're always going to throw the ball to Bumrah over Siraj.
100%. And I mean, he is kind of forced to play second fiddle to Bumrah, but you know, he doesn't like to play second fiddle clearly, because he's at his best when he is the leader of the attack and he always steps up almost, you know. And numbers prove, Jared, that India win test matches in Sena nations when Siraj performs, right? So they also lose when he doesn't perform. He is that kind of bowler, and the dichotomy is insane, right? So Siraj is averaging 18 in Sena test wins for India with the ball and nearly 40 in losses. So that differential to me suggests that Siraj is kind of dictating India's Sena test results, even though I know that there's not a lot of correlation over there. But clearly when he does well, India's chances of victory are elevated.
Yeah, and also the other thing those numbers show is hot and cold.
Yes.
Right? Like, he's so hot and cold in a way that, you know, goes back to, you know, we did two pieces on him, right? We did one about this hot and cold nature of him, which is that he is he's unable to find that magic formula sometimes. Mm. And so he, and I think he even tries harder. And him trying harder usually just means the ball slides onto the bath better for players, and they just play him really well. And so when he's hot, you know, I can't remember. It was one of, I think it was one of the Geo producers was having a joke with me one day, was saying that she was like, and Siraj bowls, you know, has a better delivery. You're saying that he has a better delivery than Bumrah. And I was like, yeah, he does. His off cutter that comes back 83 miles, you know, 83 meters is better than anything Bumrah bowls. But he bowls a lot of balls that just slide straight up to the middle of the bat in between that. And he doesn't always know how to go between those two things. And that's the issue.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because we've spoken a lot about the type of bowler that Siraj is on Good Areas, the network, and in our WhatsApp chats. You mentioned that he's either hot or cold. I mean, you put it a better way in your piece where you said he's either etched in memory or he's forgettable, because he's bowling filth when he's cold. And when he's hot, he takes wickets in clusters and wins you games of cricket almost single-handedly. And Stuart Broad is the other bowler who does this. Yeah. But Broad, on a bad day, can also, you know, do a holding job, whereas Siraj will kind of just give it away. So they're both rhythm bowlers, but two different kinds of rhythm bowlers, and you don't really know what to get with Siraj at the start of any game.
Yeah, so Broad's big advantage is that, so Broad actually starts his career as a batter who bowls like Jacob Oram type bowling, right? This is very common of tall players. All you need to do is hit a good length and you're awkward and it's hard to score off you. And, you know, we've seen many, you know, Bo Webster does a similar kind of thing for Australia, right? It's a very normal trope of that kind of player.
Yeah.
Even though he got a lot faster and becomes a proper seamer later in his career, he has the ability to go back and do that. And if you look at, there's a lot of Joel Garner spells where he does this, right? Where, you know, to talk about Siraj before, of, you know, what role. Joel Garner could be the best bowler in the team, or he could be the support bowler in the team, right? He had that ability. Yeah. And his support was, okay, well, I'm just going to bowl back of a length just outside off stump and above, and I'm going to bowl this consistently, and I'm going to pull the game back, right? And I'm going to pull it back. The problem with someone like Siraj is he skids onto the bat. So he doesn't, he's probably more like a Darren Goff type bowler, if you look, or you know, from that sort of, not that he's quite as, I don't think he's quite as short as Goffy, but similar kind of bowler in that he's sort of skidding onto the bat. How do you control the game when you're skidding onto the bat? Secondly, he's not like Bumrah level or Philander level accurate.
Yeah.
Right? So we've seen him before sometimes where he just can't hit the right length for a long, or line for a long enough period of time. So he doesn't really have anything to go back to when he's not in rhythm. So Broad can go up to, you know, magical Broad level, and then come back down and be Jacob Oram.
Yeah.
Siraj kind of has, I'm going to take lots of wickets, or I'm just going to get smashed for runs. And so it makes him a much more inconsistent bowler technically. Right. So I think we always think about these things as emotionally, right? Of like, oh, he's just not, you know, he's not trying hard today or whatever else or whatever this is.
Which is ridiculous if you're saying that Siraj isn't trying hard.
Exactly.
I mean,
what it actually is he probably does. And maybe one day he works this out. Maybe there's a method that he could do, but he's 31. Hmm. If he hasn't worked it out by now, chances are he's always going to struggle with that. Maybe what happens is as he hits 31, 32, 33, he works out how to find his rhythm more often.
Yeah. Well, I think the best way to put it is that Siraj is either bowling peaches or pies. There is no in between, right? Yeah. And if we actually talk about his skill levels, right? If you go into like the meat of things and get a bit technical, he proved at the Oval that on his day his outswingers are as good as anybody, and then, you know, he also challenges the pads and the stumps an awful lot with his nip packers, where he uses the three-quarter seam wobble ball delivery as his main weapon. I want to ask you, what do you think, like, how much of Siraj's magic is calculated, and do you think he's always in control of it? Because I don't. Right?
No, I think if he was always in control of it, he would be able to get more consistent lateral movement. So I as I said before, that's why he has problems. He needs lateral movement more than, so Gus Atkinson doesn't need all that much lateral movement, right? Because Gus Atkinson is probably quite consistently about half a yard quicker, right? Yeah. He's not like a deadly accurate bowler, but he's more at the spot and near the spot consistently. And you can get a little bit of, you know, it gets a little bit more energy probably off the pitch vertically, right? I don't know how much, if he's that much taller than Siraj, but it seems like he gets a little bit more bounce, right? So Gus Atkinson can bowl. And as long as the pitch is not doing nothing, Gus Atkinson is probably a handful, right?
Yeah.
He only needs a little bit of movement for Gus Atkinson to go from nothing to something. The problem Atkinson is always going to have is because he doesn't generate as much movement as other bowlers, that he's just not going to cause top-level players all that much concerns once they start to work him out a little bit more. Siraj creates massive amount of lateral movement, right? So when he moves it, as we saw, he can swing it a long way. He can seam it a long way.
Yep.
He really does get the ball to dart in either direction.
He's probably India's best wobble ball bowler as well, if you think about it, right?
Yeah, yeah, I would say so. But what he can't do is consistently get that kind of movement. So he's not like a... He's kind of more like an Atkinson in that he needs the surface to be helping him a lot more. They'd say someone like, it's not a perfect example, but someone like a Philander, right? Or even like a Cook, right? Who played, you know, or Abbas. Those guys can get, even on flat wickets, they're probably going to get the ball to move off the straight a little bit. Right? Because I think they know exactly what they're doing and what they're doing is repeatable. So they don't always need the assistance. Right? Atkinson 100% needs the assistance to be able to move. I don't know if Atkinson, unless there's something going on in the atmosphere off the pitch, he's probably going to bowl almost gun barrel straight over and over again. Unrit Nilki is another bowler like this, right? Whereas those other guys, Tim Southee, he's always going to be getting the ball to do a little bit. It might not be enough to challenge the batters, but it's going to be able to do something. Siraj is probably more in the Atkinson camp, but then when he gets the ball to move, it moves more in the Tim Southee version. And then it can really hoop in one direction. And he has he actually has the exact same wobble ball as Tim Southee, that three-quarter seam that darts back violently, right?
Yes.
But he can't get it as consistently. And he's and this is the thing of he's a late bloomer to cricket. So I think mentally he's like a 26, 27-year-old. Maybe he hasn't got the overs under him that some other 31-year-olds have, which might help. But he is actually 31 years old, right? And so... Is there a possibility that he's about to develop that sort of late career smart bowling thing, but his body is also about to deteriorate? So we might never actually see the best of Siraj, right? Which is generally when you're still keeping your bowling athleticism, but you're completely on top of your technical skills. And he's might be, as he gets to become a genius of his technical skills, his body may not be able to bowl 90 mile an hour balls anymore.
Yeah, I mean, we know that his best ball is amazing, but it's all of that garbage that he bowls otherwise on days where it's not going for him. That's kind of the concerning bit. Either way, you know, it's he's a great, you know, case study for us nerds to kind of try to understand. And yeah, I mean, the spark is sparkling at times and other days it's just not there. But that's what makes Siraj's magic special, I suppose. More on that, though. We'll be taking a short break now. You guys are watching Footmarks with Jared and Behram, and we'll be back in like half a minute. And yes, go nowhere because there's a lot to talk about Mohammad Siraj still.
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
Welcome back to the Footmarks podcast. You guys are with Jared and Behram. And since we were speaking about Siraj's magic, Jared, it's worth mentioning that his nickname in India is Mia Magic. But at that same time, he's had some tough moments with Indian cricket fans as well. Of course, Siraj comes from a modest background, a very humble background. He is an underprivileged son of a Muslim father who was an auto rickshaw driver in Hyderabad. And online trolls have mocked him for all of this when he's had bad days on a cricket field. He's even faced racial abuse in Australia by cricket fans. But somehow, these things haven't broken him. They've only made him stronger. And he is one to clap back. He just doesn't always just absorb it. He can bite you.
Yeah, I think he is. To go back to the consistency thing, if you're going to look for one other part of it, is he's probably not mentally consistent. And he probably gets too high and too low. And some of that is maybe because of the background he's had, right? Like, he feels like he's fighting for every inch. It feels like he's even fighting for respect from Indian fans after having done quite a few amazing things for them already, right? And I think that, you know, that the sort of high and the low, he certainly is someone. It's funny, I quite often like to just sort of watch one player in the field. And I think the piece I wrote was largely from watching him in the field, just because I found him so captivating on a day where everyone else from India had given up, right? And he just hadn't given up at that point. And you watch him around the rest of the field at that point, and you just realize how much he's involved in everything. And he has that kind of personality, and it's infectious, but it's also probably... it probably gets him into situations where, like, he sends Travis Head off after Travis Head has destroyed him, right? Mm. Like, it gets him into situations that he doesn't need to be in and everything else. But it's what drives him. And so he, as a player, is going to have higher highs and lower lows, I think, than maybe a more steady-headed player, like a Bumrah or a Shami.
Mm.
And then, because of the performance aspect of Mohammad Siraj, people are going to notice him more, right? And, you know, he was booed quite a bit during this series by England fans. He was booed in Australia. And so he becomes, you know, what do they call it? The central character for a day, quite often, for Indian fans and for non-Indian fans, right?
Yep. Yeah, for neutrals as well, I'd say, because I'm not Indian, Australian or English. And I think that he's always, like, captivating all these spectators with his antics. And there's more that I want to discuss about that later. But I actually think that you've made a very solid point over here, that his emotional imbalance will either get the best out of him or the worst out of him. And I think his breakthrough moment in Test cricket is kind of really relevant over here, because back in 2020, when Siraj goes on to help India win that famous Gabba Test match with a fifer, and India win that, you know, Border Gavaskar trophy in dramatic fashion as well, only 2 months prior, he had lost his father. It was COVID times and he couldn't even attend the funeral, as he was already in Australia and, you know, COVID bubbles were still a thing back in the day. And Siraj is someone who'd always drawn inspiration from his father's hard work as an auto rickshaw driver and his father's sacrifices for him. So, you know, he probably is at that point, you know, is thinking that, what better way to honor my father than helping India win a test match and series for the ages and becoming an overnight sensation and national hero? I think that kind of speaks volumes to the man that Mohammad Siraj is, kind of, you know?
Yeah, it does. I think you're right. I think he does have, I was going to say a hero complex, and that's making it sound wrong, but I do think he has a kind of a something within him that makes him feel that he needs to achieve these things, and he wants to be the center of attention, and he wants to be the hero and everything else. That really helps. Roger Federer is kind of the ideal athlete, right?
Yes.
Roger Federer had an internal drive, but he also understood that he was going to lose some points and he was going to win some points. And if you go back to the Gautam Gambhir style of things, where it's like every moment is life or death, you can't do that as a professional athlete. Because, you know, and the main reason you can't do that as a professional athlete, I'm not saying someone like Gambhir can't, but the average athlete can't do this, is because it takes too much out of you.
Yep.
Right? You know that you are going to, you know, what's the Michael Jordan line? I missed 9,000 shots. Yep. If you live and die every single shot, it's harder to take the next shot. Right? If you live and die every single run or every single ball or every single, you know, spell or whatever that may be, it's harder to actually do that. And so, Siraj, that actually, it helps him when it helps him, but it also hurts him when it hurts him.
Absolutely.
And so the best athletes are able to, you know, sort of Ivan Lendl themselves off a little bit and do that. But they might not reach the heights of someone who needs that pure inspiration every single moment, right?
Yeah,
But that's where, and he's missing the professional aspects, because if he could go back and understand, okay, my role now is to go for less than 3 runs and over in this spell. This is how I'm going to do it. I have the technical skills to be able to do this. Whereas I'm not sure he has that. And I think even when, sometimes when you see him bowling dry, he can't help but try and go for a wicket because that's kind of how he's going. And it's probably the thing that will stop him ever from being a consistent top level bowler, but doesn't mean that he doesn't have the ability to get there when he needs to. And part of that, as you said, is this inspiration that he gets from all these different areas.
Yeah, I mean, to me, he seems like the sort of character or cricketer who always needs galvanizing. And maybe in that regard, Gautam Gambhir might not be the worst coach for him, if you think about it. But then again, if you are always requiring galvanizing, then whilst that could be perceived as a strength, that is a bit of a weakness, because then you can't be repeatable with your performances, and what you really need to be focusing on is maybe harnessing your own magic, which is something that he does lack. And maybe that imperfection is what makes him a wonderful specimen to examine.
So there's a lot of people who can write, a lot of professional writers who can write like a great feature every now and again, yeah, right? And the difference between them and the constant feature writers is that a great feature writer can come up with a topic that people maybe don't think is going to be a great feature and turn it into that. And then a week later, come up with a really, really good one. And then a couple of weeks later, maybe they've got another great one. And then once a year, they'll have that S tier level one, right?
Yeah.
Whereas the other people won't even attempt it, because they're waiting for the inspiration. And that's one thing I try and teach in my writing course is like, that's not how this works, right? Yeah. If you're a professional sports writer, you have to write every day, basically, right? Most professional sports writers are writing, you know, especially these days, like 3 or 4 times a week, right?
Yeah.
If you wait for inspiration, right? Mm. That means you might write one good piece a month and the rest is not even worth reading, right? But that doesn't make any sense. And it's very similar with athletes. And I think it's something that we saw with Stuart Broad as well, right?
Yeah.
Of like, Stuart Broad would be like, oh, they said this and it inspired me to do this. And it's like, yeah, that actually is not a great mark on your career. The great mark on your career is that you want to be like Sachin or Glenn McGrath and you want to take a wicket every single day. Yeah. And not just in the moment. You know, there's a reason why Sachin is where he is and Lara is where he is. And it's because Lara didn't have what Sachin had, which is the ability to inspire himself every day, right? Yeah. And I think if you're waiting for, like, I don't know, Travis Head to annoy you or the England fans to boo you or Indian fans to turn on you on Instagram or something to fire you up, like, then you're actually not as good a professional as you should be. And it's when I get really upset. I remember when chatting to some coaches about this and they were like, there was a, this is way back. I can't remember what it was, but I think it was Colin Graves when he took over as the ECB, he called the West Indies a mediocre side, right?
Uh-huh.
And then I think the first test was a draw and the West Indies won the second test. And everyone was like, aha, he inspired them. And I was like, well, why didn't that inspire them for the first test to begin with?
Yeah.
Right. They might've even lost the first test. I can't even remember now. And secondly, it's like, if you're in the West Indies, are you waiting for chairman to do that? Right?
You shouldn't require anything to fire you up, right? You should be coming in with your own plans of how to rattle the opposition. And you should always be striving for brilliance, which is what makes the Roger Federer example really, really spot on.
There's a great one with Shaquille O'Neal, which I don't know if we've talked about before, but it's so funny. You know, Shaquille O'Neal, when he was a kid, went up and asked for an autograph from David Robinson, and David Robinson said no. And so Shaquille O'Neal said, for the rest of his career, tried to destroy David Robinson, right?
Yeah.
Except it didn't happen. Shaquille O'Neal made it up because he wanted to destroy David Robinson. He didn't wait for David Robinson to give him a slight, right? And I can't remember, there was another athlete who was talking about going up against Tim Duncan. He found it really hard because Tim Duncan was really nice and polite, right? And Tim Duncan would be like, oh, good shot. Ooh, bad luck. You almost got me there and whatever. And this guy was like, no, I want him to call me a mofo and I want him to, you know, insult me and all this sort of stuff. I couldn't get fired up. And it's like, well, that's on you.
Yeah.
Because if you go watch The Last Dance, Michael Jordan just makes up reasons to beat people for nothing.
That teammate. His teammate is the one he's hating on for the longest time just to fire himself up. It's weird.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Larry Bird would go into the arena and say to the Boston statistician, what's the points record in this? And I think that there's something, and Siraj has this passion, but as I said, some of it is learning how to get it to you so that you can use it in the right way. He's never going to be an Ivan Lendl or a Roger Federer, right? Yeah. We're not saying that is the, but what we are saying is that they found a way to motivate themselves every single day. You know, Glenn McGrath. Glenn McGrath wasn't better against England than he was against Zimbabwe because Glenn McGrath saw a batter at the other end that he had to destroy. Right? Yeah. He almost needed that wicket every time. And I think there's something within Siraj where he does need that external motivation. And I think what you and I are trying to say is that actually holds you back a little bit.
It does. Absolutely. And I mean, even if you look at his overall test record, it doesn't like scream spectacular or stellar at all. Like it's actually not even that good. It's fairly average. And I think that's a good reflection of all of these things that we've just spoken about with respect to Siraj, the character and the cricketer, where, you know, 41 test matches, 123 wickets at 31 apiece. That is not like the sort of record that gets spoken of a lot. And, you know, we can all agree that those numbers aren't stellar, but then I would also argue that they don't really define him, Jared, because if this tour of England, if this has proven anything, it's that Siraj simply never gives up and he keeps bowling his heart out even when there is no juice left in his body and his teammates are dejected as well. So that is exactly why I feel like this tour of England, this Anderson Tendulkar Trophy, was a legacy-building series for him because he has essentially categorized himself as the man who never quits.
Yeah, and I think that that's a good... I think having that before, his identity was probably inconsistent. Is that fair? Match winner and match loser, right? If his new identity is I never give up and he buys into that, that's really interesting, right? Like I'm just, no matter what happens, I'm going to do that. It's not going to work every day, but no matter how far we get behind, I'm going to be the person who believes that we can get a wicket. I'm going to be the person who tries for that. Maybe he gives up on ever trying to be a defensive bowler in any situation, right? And he just says, because you could make an argument that he's a very different bowler than Brett Lee, but you could make an argument he plays a similar role for India as Brett Lee did for Australia, which is if your best bowler is an attacking and defensive option at the same time, do you need your second best bowler to be a defensive option? Or do you want him to just go out and attack? Now, it's a bit different with Australia because they had Gillespie and he doesn't always have Shami there, right? So if he has Shami in, he could probably play that role where it's just like, we want you to try harder than anyone's ever tried. We're going to throw the ball back to you. And in fact, we're going to bowl you maybe more overs than some of the other guys because you're going to bowl the Neil Wagner spells, right? And there is an element of that. But you do look at his overall record. And for someone who's a late bloomer to test cricket, who, you know, is not as streamlined as, you know, someone like Prashant Krishna. Prashant Krishna, I've never met Prasit Krishna, but watching him and listening to the conversations he had this summer, it feels like to me, this is a guy who really understands cricket, has been in it for a very long time, you know, and is a smart bowler trying to make the best of what he can. Mohammad Siraj is like a beating heart with an off cutter, right?
Yeah.
They're very different. As he matures, he will pick up some of these things. But he, because he doesn't play with a hard ball at 15, 16, 17, he doesn't have the same development that other people have. Now, there's always a Bumrah and there's always a Makram out there, right? Those guys are next level geniuses that Siraj is not at. But if you look at his record at the moment, right, for all the question marks we have over him, averaging 31 as an Asian seamer after 41 tests is pretty good for a guy who's kind of a first change bowler as well, right? Like, what is Chaminder Vaas's career is probably about 29 average, I would say.
Something like that, right?
They're very different kind of characters. Whereas I actually think Chaminder Vaas would have been great if he had two other seamers around him, or at least one other great seamer. I think Chaminder Vaas would have been better. But he's not that far off Chaminder Vaas's numbers. Different era, different pitches. We understand all those sorts of things. But traditionally, that's a better average. Would that be lower than Srinath, lower than Zahir Khan? I would have thought off the top of my head.
Yes.
They're not bad numbers. It's just if the bloke at the other end's averaging 19, you look like a dick.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I'm all here for the transition from Siraj being labeled as inconsistent Siraj to Siraj now being seen as the lion-hearted, relentless performer that he has proven to be. And I want to dig a bit further deep into that. But before, we shall be taking a short break. You guys are watching Footmarks with Jared and Behram, and go nowhere. We'll be back in like half a minute.
Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumper turned the nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting.
Welcome back to Footmarks. You guys are with Jared and Behram. And just to kind of go deeper into the character and, you know, mindset of Siraj, Jared, you know, he was at the wrong end of the stick when Shoaib Bashir's ball that he middles, right, rolls back to his stumps to dislodge a bale at Lord's and India lose that test match. And then he drops Harry Brook, which then goes for six at the Oval at a very critical juncture of the game. These are the sort of instances or emotional battles that can break a sports person. They can bog you down. You can be deflated afterwards. But Siraj, almost at the very end of the series, he steals his moment in the face of all of this mental strain, right? Like, I think it takes a special kind of resilience to deliver under those circumstances. And I don't know what galvanized him, but maybe it was the fact that, you know, this game is still on and I can still do something. Because if you looked around, everyone had sort of lost heart. But Siraj, as you mentioned time after time, he just kept trying hard.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the difference between him and if you look at Akash Deep and Prashant Krishna, and you could put in a bunch of the fielders as well, but
yeah.
If you look at the other two bowlers, of they might go on to have better careers, right? Mm. Especially Prashant Krishna with all the gifts that he has. He might go on to have a better career. But specifically, they're never going to be like Siraj. You know, you always need that one player. I remember it's this story of Brett Jeeves being really upset with George Bailey, the captain. Where Tasmania, they'd gone like maybe they had a 75 run lead, right? And Bailey said to Jeeves, you know, go out there, give him hell for a couple of overs. And then when it didn't work and it was quite clear they were going to lose, he's like, mate, don't, let's rest. We've got other games coming up and everything else. And Brett Jeeves is like, who does that? Like, I'm going to run through a brick wall. And it's like, George Bailey is looking at this quite realistic and thinking, we're going to lose this game anyway. I don't want my best fast bowler injured here so that we can't use him, you know, going ahead, right? He's a really important person for that team. But it also, there's a lot of teams have that sort of Brett Jeeves, Muhammad Siraj type character. Ooh. Merv Hughes, right? It was like, yeah. Merv Hughes was that sort of guy. It was just like, I mean, Merv Hughes bowled until like his knees were basically emptied because that's how he saw the game. And not everyone does that. And a lot of people are smarter than that and whatever. But the ability to be able to do that is something, again, as to go back to all the different things that he has. It's easy to focus on the negatives and everything else. Yeah. But this is another skill that he has that it's very hard to beat Siraj because he doesn't believe he's beaten. And if remember the Travis Head one?
Mm.
The reason he feels that way is because in his head, he's in a heavyweight contest with Travis Head.
Yep.
Right? That's what he is in. Whereas everyone else is like, yeah, you've already been beaten, buddy. You're done.
Yeah.
That's not how he's seeing it. And so that's why he doesn't give up when other people do.
Absolutely. And you know, on one hand, you've got the George Bailey-esque pragmatic cricketer and then the Brett Jeeves or Siraj type fighter or dreamer who's like, oh no, this is not over yet. We can still win this. I'm still going to give it everything that I've got, every last ounce of my energy. And, you know, there's more to it. One thing is performing and the other thing is all of the extra stuff that comes with it, right? Like Siraj is pumping up the crowd every now and then. He's always trying to motivate his teammates. He's fully committing in the field despite not being the best fielder, right? We all know that he's not the best fielder, but his commitment levels are high. Yeah, and he even walked those extra 50 meters to apologize to his teammate Prasad Krishna after dropping Harry Brook off his bowling. These kind of traits, I feel, they lay testament to the kind of character and person that Muhammad Siraj is, and he's basically screaming perseverance, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good way of looking at it. And you know, he believes that he can make things happen that they can't. Right. And athletes in general kind of do that. Like if you think of great athletes, that's kind of a big part of it is they believe when no one else does, right? That's why they get up at 5 a.m, right? That's why they put in the extra gym session. That's why they do all these different things. But when you become a professional, it becomes more about professionalism and understanding and everything else. And it's hard to keep that energy that he has up.
Hmm.
But there are people who do it. And he clearly is someone who is wired in that particular way of, I'm going to just keep going. I'm going to keep running into the brick wall until the brick wall's down, right? Yeah. And we all go, you can't knock the brick wall down. And he's like, well, let's see.
Yeah, he basically goes, I will either die myself or I'll kill you, right? Like he has that sort of mentality. And you get these sort of cricketers, which are also like, I feel like the sport is richer because they exist. But Siraj takes it a bit further. He also has this villain arc or anti-hero arc, which I think he relishes. He really enjoys that. Throw in the celebrities, the bail switches, the, you know, loving being booed by crowds in Australia and England. And I feel like he brings out the best in him when he is an anti-hero, especially with respect to opposition fans. And this makes him a bit unique, because when I think of characteristics or traits that are associated with, you know, most Indian fast bowlers, I don't think anyone else has that. It's only Siraj, right? If you think about it.
That's quite interesting. I think this comes back to, though, he is constantly looking for external motivation.
Yeah, it does come down to that. But then Stuart Broad had a villainous arc as well, but he's different, right?
But he's not, though, is he? I think Stuart Broad had a similar kind of thing of Stuart Broad wanted the external motivation to help him, right? Hmm. Whereas Jimmy Anderson did not need the external motivation. Criticism obviously upset Jimmy at different times, and Jimmy Clouderson was a big thing that got on his nerves and everything. But Jimmy was going to go out and try and get wickets for you every time, and it was going to be the most important thing. Whereas there were times when Stuart Broad was just going with the flow, right?
Yeah,
and that was a very normal part of who Stuart Broad was. So again, being the villain, being the center of attention, being everything else, now the pressure's on you and you have to perform. I think both of them need that. I think it is ultimately, I think it can be harnessed as a professional attribute.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's what either of them are trying to do or whether it's just a part of it. But if you, the difference between being A tier and S tier and even B tier sometimes is the ability to just get that out of yourself, right? And do that. And that's the thing that, if you're defining yourself that way, what if the crowd just don't care enough to boo you?
Yeah, that's also true. And I mean, you know, you could make several attempts at getting underneath the opposition team's skin, but if you fail, you're the one who ends up kind of looking like a dick as well, right? Like, I mean, there's that aspect of this, but I feel like, you know...
Yeah, but there are people who perform better in high-pressure situations, aren't they? As in, not because they're not clutch people. It's just that, I think there's a plot point in The West Wing where, like, they sometimes he needs the juice before he goes on to give. He needs the sort of the chaos. So that I think his wife cuts off his tie or something in The West Wing, right? And there are people that are better like that. I've done a lot of live performing over the years. I'm probably not at my best when I'm relaxed. I'm at my best when something is bothering me or I'm running late to the event or whatever, because I bring an energy with me that I don't normally have. So that. Athletes have similar kind of versions to that. And I think once you put your pressure on yourself to perform, you maybe just concentrate more, right? Like, I know it's as simple as that.
And I mean, the villainous arc doesn't always help him, but at times it does. And like I said, it makes for spectacular viewing if you are an Indian, a non-Indian, or a neutral. So I suppose there's that to him. But the million-dollar question over here is, I suppose, Jared, that do you think you would enjoy playing against Siraj, or would he annoy you to death?
I don't know. I don't know if I play his off cutter particularly well. No, I mean, players like Siraj probably bring out my best, like as a player, like in sport. As I said before, I'm not at my best when I'm cruising, right? Yeah. Because I need to be heightened. So even if it's whether it's about writing or content creation or live performance or playing sport. You know, we did that podcast with Rafi a while back about his book about, what's it called? Is it called Smack Talk? But it's the one about sledging. That's not about, it doesn't say sledging, whatever it's called.
I remember that, Red Inca.
Yeah, yeah. And I was asking him about the psychology of this. I said, because I know for a fact that if I'm batting and I'm just batting on my own and the opposition aren't talking to me, I just kind of go through the motions a little bit. The minute someone comes to me with something and says something, it just snaps me into a different mode, right? And it's the same with, I'm probably technically much better at bowling to someone who plays me from the crease, right? As in, because I'm a bit a slower bowler, it suits my bowling a little bit more. But if someone is using their feet, I start bowling with more energy straight away, right? Like, I need that sort of stuff. So someone like Siraj is probably, I'd much rather go up against someone like him because he's more likely to snap me out of my bubble, right? But there are many people in the world that would just be annoyed by him. Yeah, like because he is an irritant. And that includes his teammates as well, right? Like, he is an irritant. Part of his charm is that he is irritating and that he demands your attention, right?
He does. I feel like if I would go up against him, we'd probably like really be going at each other, right? Because I'm kind of the same character on the field, must be really hard for some people to imagine.
I wonder how many times he seems to be involved with the batter after each ball more than anyone else in modern cricket at the moment.
Right? I think that's fair.
Am I missing someone else? I can't think of another bowler who takes as much of your attention as a batter after it. As I said, for me, that would have helped. I'm sure for many people, it's complete opposite, right? It would be an absolute pain. Ross Taylor couldn't see at night or when the clouds were in. Eventually, he had to see an eye specialist who would fix his eyesight. In the 2 years before the change, he still averaged more than 50 in international cricket. The top level of batting talent can basically see in the dark. That is who we are talking about in our new book, The Art of Batting. Head over and order your copy today.
Yep. Anyway, there are a couple of technical things that I want to discuss with you before we end this. I read both of your pieces. I studied hard and I was like, you know, there's one thing that I don't quite understand. And that was how Siraj goes from being a left-handed batter destroyer to someone who can't bowl to them at all. Like, and you use the 2021 Lords Test match, which India win, as a point. And before that Test match, Siraj's economy rate, you know, that was not as high. That goes up after Lords 2021. And his average versus left-handed batters, it shoots up by 30 runs per dismissal. That is not a small number, right? It is massive. What do you think happened here?
Funnily enough, is it possible that he had the reverse Broad? The Broad actually has a thing where... It's funny, Broad's doing an ad about this at the moment on UK television where he's like, I discovered I wasn't as good against left-handers. And so I bowled around the wicket and I became great against left-handers. And it's like, that, is, to my understanding, is not what happened. What actually happens is he loses his wrist position. And so instead of bowling out swingers, he starts moving the ball away from left-handers. When he comes around the wicket, that makes it even more impossible, right? But it's a technical change. Siraj's best ball for a long period of time was that off-cutter that jagged sideways. How is a left-hander ever going to play that? Right? You're always going to edge it, miss it, or be bowled by it, right? That's no longer, he doesn't get as much sideways lateral on that off cutter as he used to. I wonder if it's as simple as that ball now is maybe not his main ball. He gets a little bit of movement to the side. And so he's gone from there. There must be another technical thing on top of that. I didn't get a chance to go through and have a look at how he used to bowl to left-handers compared to anyone else, but I would assume that that's what it is. And that's generally what those things are, right? It's just a technical change. So it's probably made him better against right-handers and worse against left-handers, which is generally what you want to be, like if you're going to choose one or the other. Whereas in Broad's case, it went the other way around.
It is really fascinating, and that kind of stuck out to me. Also, there's one thing that doesn't get discussed enough. You know, I have a theory with the whole Bumrah-Siraj thing, that when Jasprit Bumrah is playing, batters are so cautious versus him that they kind of, you know, take Siraj on, and perhaps that's why there is such a big disparity between Siraj's average when Bumrah is playing and he isn't. But there's one thing that, you know, I feel is also very important, and that's the preferred bowling end. Siraj doesn't always get his preferred bowling end, and I reckon his numbers would have looked a lot better if he did.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to before. What I was saying is, if he's, even in the IPL, when Hazelwood's there, he's probably still getting what he wants, right?
Yeah,
he's probably still getting that choice to be able to make that. Whereas now, as you say, he won't get that. So I do think that's a part of it. Also, he's just not. I think bowling end might be part of it. It might also just be that he's not getting the exact choices of a few different things. Of if the ball starts to swing, right, and him and Bumrah are rested. Who's going to come back on?
Yeah.
Right? If the ball's reverse swinging and one of the spinners is bowling well and they want to keep it reverse swinging at one end and use the spinner, which seam is going to use it, right?
True.
So that's what I mean. You do end up it's not like India are mistreating him or anything. It's just a normal thing of, I think, partly being an Asian spinner when you're not always going to bowl in tandem, right? And so, we need four overs of reverse here. We'll just give it to Bumrah, right?
Yeah.
And so he's going to cherry pick the best time to bowl over and over again. And so I do think all those things play a part.
Yeah, and I mean, he is a high volume bowler. I mean, we've been seeing that for a while now, especially with Bumrah being a bit fragile and his body kind of giving up on him. That puts even more pressure on Siraj to just be like, you know, an absolute workhorse. But in conclusion, I suppose we can say that Siraj is wildly inconsistent. So much so that on his best days, he can move mountains. And, you know, on his worst days, he probably can't button up a shirt. And he is a moments cricketer. right? But even on the bad days, he is an absolute workhorse. And there's the last thing over here, that he's 31 years of age, right? And there might not be a lot of room for development, further development, but he could potentially harness his magic a bit more and understand his game to the point where his last couple of years could be the best he'll ever have. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, no, I do think it's interesting because he is a late developing cricketer. As I said before, we could see something. I think he's changed slightly as a bowler. I think we could see that in the left-handed numbers, right? I do think there's an element of this. I also think this series will, you know, it's probably cemented him as a leader of the attack, even if he isn't the leader of the attack.
Yeah.
So he should think slightly different from those perspectives. I think he's smarter now than he ever has been. And considering he's just bowled a million overs, as long as he hasn't like killed his tank in these last 10 test matches, then hopefully we can see a 2 or 3 year period where he has an Ishant Sharma like period where he gets everything right and does it from that perspective. But it's also possible that this is it. This is what Siraj is. And
this is the best he'll ever be. That's a possibility as well.
And I think there's one thing that Indians need to understand is that, like, there is more talent in India than anywhere else, right? And there's this incredible factory coming through, and we would only assume over the next few years it will get even deep. But that doesn't mean that every player, it doesn't mean you're going to have 4 Bumrahs and 3 Ashwins and 2 Jadejas.
Yeah.
Right?
You'll need your Sirajas more than most, I think, because generational players only come about every once in a while. But
exactly.
If there are other cricketers who aren't as skilled, but they are inspired by Siraj's work ethic and commitment levels, that could augur really well for India.
Well, not even just inspiring, but I just mean that you have to accept that these players are not perfect.
Yes.
Right? Bumrah is nearly perfect, right? Ravi Jadeja is nearly perfect. Ashwin was pretty close to being perfect, right? Most players are not... Even if they play for India, I'm not going to be on that level. Shubman Gill and Jaiswal both have some technical glitches that they need to iron out that they may never iron out, right? And so, Rahul Dravid probably could have scored quicker, right? Like, I think if he came back through now, he probably would have changed his game to give himself a little bit more freedom to cash in on the days he was seeing the ball really well, right?
Yeah.
If you only focus on the flaws, you're missing what these players can do. And I think that Siraj is a very special player, and that doesn't mean he won't frustrate fans at times. But you have to accept that he is going to be, he's not going to be Bumrah, and this is what it is. And if you expect every bowler to be like Bumrah, Australia only had 1 Glenn McGrath, right? Gillespie wasn't on that level. Brett Lee wasn't on that level. David Fleming wasn't on that level. They were all really great bowlers in different ways, right? Yeah. But they weren't on that on that same level. They had, they had parts of their game that didn't work as well. If you only focus on the bits that don't work well, you're overlooking this. And there aren't many perfect players out there. And I don't think Siraj is ever going to be one of them. But it doesn't mean that he can't be a wonderful player.
Absolutely, and there are a lot of things that make him special and a lot of things that make him imperfect, which have all been discussed in this podcast. We've been thorough. So I suppose the last thing that I want to talk to you about is that we've got Bumrah, Kapil, Zaheer, Shami, Ishant, Siraj. Where does he fall in the pecking order for you? Throw in Carson Gavri in this because you're obsessed with him.
I think at the moment he's probably... Carson Garver is interesting because he bowls spin as well. So I think you have to take him out of that one. But he's not as good as Srinath, is he? And
There's Srinath as well. Sorry, I forgot him.
Oh, sorry, I thought you said Srinath. He's probably not as important as Zaheer Khan. In Zaheer Khan's thing was that he was they might actually be quite similar in some ways. And they both probably have the same flaw, which is by being a bit skiddy, if the ball's not moving around, they just ended up hitting the middle of the bat a lot. But I think Zaheer Khan was basically a bowling coach, right, out in the middle. Yeah. So he could train other people around him and everything else. So he has a different kind of impact. But yeah,
Ishant has that advantage.
But he's never had an Ishant-type level, has he? He's gone ahead of Umesh Yadav.
Yes.
I think that's fair, isn't it?
Yep. With Ishant, it's interesting because if you take... the first half of Ishant Sharma's career, then Siraj is better. And then the second half, Ishant is probably better than most of those other guys.
Exactly. Yeah. So, look, I think he's safely within the top 10, isn't he? I don't think there'd be any argument he's not within the top 10 already. Yeah. Where he ends up is probably, it's whether he can match the smarter version of Siraj with a while his body is still letting him bowl at 87 miles an hour, right? And that's the, I think that's the thing. Otherwise, he might end up like late career Peter Siddle, right? Where maybe he can be, I don't even know if he could do that, right? I don't even know if he can sort of have that kind of career because Peter Siddle's a different kind of bowler. But that's kind of where, if he can do that, he ends up in the top 10. But he can make it to the top probably five or six. But I don't know how many of those guys he can leapfrog at this point. But as I said, because he doesn't have the same amount of... So I think I'm right in saying this, that Ishant was basically in the system from like 13 or 14.
Yeah,
right?
he's been there for a long time.
Yeah, bowling absolutely tons of overs. Started playing test cricket when he was a teenager, right? How does that compare to a kid who never had that professional load until he was, what, 23, 24, 25?
True.
Right, when he's fully developed. Maybe he can just go on longer than some of these guys. And that becomes, because that is also part of his skill, is the fact that he can bowl through tiredness and pain in a way that other people can't. And it's a huge part of fast bowling is simply the fact that you can continue to do it, right? Like that is such a big part of it.
Absolutely. I think longevity is a massive factor when you are kind of weighing fast bowlers or their overall careers against each other. And I think you're right in saying that he is comfortably top 10, but only time will tell. You know, he's still playing cricket, of course, where he finishes. And I think he's got a decent shot at top five. But if you ask me, I don't care about that. I don't care about where he ends up with respect to, you know, the greatest Indian seamers of all time. Because what we've seen in this series is Siraj at his relentless best. He is lion-hearted, as the title of this podcast suggests. And it's interesting. I was watching a Kim Apa show and you asked Robbie that we always speak of who would be the batter who you would have bat for your life. But we never speak of who would be the bowler who would bowl for your life. And if my life is depending on someone just bowling the team out with a half-functioning leg, and every time there's a boundary scored, it pinches me, then I want Siraj to bowl for my life, right? I'll take the pinches, just save me.
Yeah, I mean, and I do think that there is something about, which I tried to capture in the piece of, there is something just about the fact that he does try hard.
Yeah.
That makes him enjoyable to watch, even if he is the villain, right?
Yeah.
He's, you know, he really is the person who will do absolutely everything to try and beat you. And he wears all of that on his face. And sometimes that beats him, and sometimes he beats you.
Absolutely. And yeah, you guys will obviously have your own opinions on Siraj and all of the discourse that has gone on in this podcast. So let us know. Make sure to let us know, in fact, in the comments section below of how you have processed this, how you look at Siraj, both from a rational, objective angle, and also emotionally, because he is that kind of cricketer. You have to look at him emotionally, and we'd love to hear back from you. And that kind of brings us to an end to this podcast. So just a quick reminder, you guys can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage, and that can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the fun work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. And of course, all of our podcasts at Good Areas are sponsored, or not sponsored, but they are supported via our patrons on Patreon, and you can become one of them by going to patreon.com/goodareaspodcast. Then you can enjoy ad-free content. You can have exclusive chats with us, slag us off, and talk about anything that you want to talk about, right? That's that sort of inclusive space that we have. But anyway, that's all for now, folks. Have a good one. Enjoy yourselves and appreciate Mohammad Siraj for what he is, I suppose. All right. Cheers and goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work.
If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.